help clients move forward when all they can think about is making their anxiety disappear? Dr. Kelly McGonigal has found that people who struggle with anxiety are often putting too much focus on the anxiety itself. You see, they can fall prey to a black and white way of thinking that actually sustains anxiety's power. So what Kelly does is help them find the one thing hidden underneath their anxiety that can lessen its impact. But to make this happen, it requires a specific change in mindset.
What I found most effective for helping people deal with anxiety is to shift their focus from thinking that they're going to find the magic trick that gets rid of the anxiety to having a new hope that really is about what is the anxiety getting in the way of, and putting their attention and energy on being able to do whatever anxiety is getting in the way of. I think often people who struggle with anxiety, and of course, you know, I'm someone, we talked about this, who I have a lot of experience with anxiety. I know why people would put their focus on, just like with physical pain, they want to get rid of this inner experience. This inner experience is the obstacle. So, you know, give me the drug that turns it off, or give me the mental trick that I will use that will turn off the anxiety. And then when that anxiety is gone, obviously then my life will be perfect and I'll be able to do whatever the anxiety is getting in the way of. And the thing that makes the biggest difference for people seems to be when they shift their focus. And I mean, I joke sometimes about saying, you know, you have to abandon all hope the anxiety will ever completely go away. And I'm sort of serious about that. And I always have to balance that with knowing that research shows that having an incremental mindset toward anxiety is important for people being able to actually make this leap. So you have to believe that something about your experience of anxiety can change. An incremental mindset is the opposite of a fixed mindset, which says, the way that I feel now is how I'll always feel. It'll never change. It'll never go away. I'm stuck in this anxiety cycle. So it's really important to have a growth mindset or an incremental mindset. It really supports people's recovery from anxiety. But the question then is, what do you believe can change? And as I said, I try to shift people's focus away from, I'm confident that I can get rid of the anxiety, to I'm confident that I can have a different relationship with this. And as that relationship changes, there's a very good chance that the inner experience will change as well.
This is an important part of how Kelly helps people turn the corner with their anxiety. It's about refocusing their relationship to anxiety while expanding their capacity to hold on to it. Dr. Stephen Hayes opened up this idea earlier in the program. He called it getting a little bit bigger. Kelly now shares how this opening of space, this incremental mindset, can help people go even further in their recovery.
To give you an example of how I often talk about this with people, because when people come to my classes, anxiety is often a big thing that they're dealing with. Either it's the thing they've identified that they want to change in a course about change, or they're taking a class about stress. And you know, there's a lot of people whose primary experience of stress is high levels of anxiety or even phobias. And recently I had a student in a large group class, and we were just having a conversation, and she was talking about her phobia of driving, particularly of driving over bridges. And she really wanted to deal with it. And so she was asking for just, you know, ideas about what should she do when she's saying to herself, I'm not going to drive because this anxiety level is too high. I don't want to feel this anxiety. And so we just had a little conversation. I asked her, well, where might you be driving that you would require you to go over a bridge? And she identified where she might be visiting friends across a particular bridge in the Bay Area. And why might you be going there? And what would you be doing there? And she's talking about that. And I said, is that part of a meaningful life? Is that part of the life that you want for yourself? And she said, yes. I said, okay, well, that's the first thing you're going to say to yourself, is you're going to shift your focus away from the anxiety in that moment to the meaning of what's triggering the anxiety. Because one of the things we know is that anxiety is often a response to something that is meaningful, not necessarily something that is threatening. And that mindset reset already is starting to create a slightly bigger container for the anxiety. If you believe that every time you feel anxiety, it's like your intuition telling you that there's danger, it's really hard to not want to trust that intuition, even though we know that's not what anxiety is. So start to already frame it. Okay, well, anxiety is often linked to things that are part of a meaningful life, things that you care about, people you care about. So that's part of this context. And then I asked her, you know, what might you say to yourself that would encourage you to go after what's meaningful? If you wanted to, if you decided you wanted to choose meaning over trying to avoid the discomfort of feeling anxious, she came up with a whole list of things. And she would say them, and I'd say them back to her. We just gave her a little repertoire of things she could try out, you know, because this is a class, so I'm not giving her some sort of like therapeutic assignment, but just some ideas she can work with herself. What's really interesting is later on in the course, she came back and shared a story about how that helped. But another student who had heard this exchange also came and told me that that had helped her and that she had had a similar phobia and that she had listened to this, it sort of unlocked for her, even just knowing that somebody else was dealing with a similar phobia helped her put her own anxiety into a little bit more perspective. And she actually thought about the other woman who was trying to drive over bridges as kind of an inspiration that helped her, and she actually drove to a wedding that was part of a meaningful life. So again, I think that that's one of the things that I love about the work that I do is that when all of this stuff is being aired out in a public way, there's a lot of this common humanity and the self-compassion that arises, even if it's not in a therapeutic context, or specifically because it's not, because people feel like, oh, I'm just human, and maybe I have some choices here. There are some options here.
Now, just to summarize how this approach can help clients grow from their anxiety, let's look at a few key points. One, help clients identify the meaningful parts of their life that the anxiety is getting in the way of. Two, help clients shift their focus away from the anxiety itself and toward the things and people that they care about. Three, help clients list what they could say to themselves to refocus on those meaningful aspects of their life, particularly when anxiety is looming large. Four, help the client to see the common humanity in their challenges. Now, one other way that Kelly helps clients reframe their anxiety is by sharing the latest research on the subject.
When I think about the studies that I share with my students when we talk about anxiety, sometimes I talk about Jeremy Jameson's work, which looks at reinterpreting anxiety as something, as your body and brain trying to help you. Jeremy Jameson, who started his research at Harvard, and now he's at the University of Rochester, I believe. And he's found that even people who have anxiety disorders, like social anxiety disorder, if they believe, they choose to believe that their anxiety is their body and brain trying to help them, and they accept it rather than feeling like they have to suppress it or avoid it, they are both better able to function and they do better with what sort of whatever they're afraid of, and they also have a healthier physiological stress response when they're stressed out. I also will often point people to the ACT literature because there are so many interesting studies looking at people dealing with difficult inner experiences that include anxiety, but also include a lot of research on physical pain or intrusive memories. Another example, people looking at sometimes what I think of as being the most intrusive inner experiences are obsessive compulsive thoughts. And there's a study that actually looked at people who struggled with OCD and had them take an accepting attitude toward their own most disturbing intrusive thought. And compared that to distraction and suppression, and found that people, and then, you know, these are of course really disturbing intrusive thoughts, like if I'm left alone with my baby, I'm going to kill my baby. So the kind of mental content that terrifies people, they're trying to push it away. And I remember that that study found that people who decided to accept and sort of allow that inner experience to be present without suppressing or without distracting and without arguing with it, they were both less disturbed by it when it happened, and they experienced fewer intrusions later on as well. And the reason that I like that study is it's one of those studies that I think illuminates how acceptance transforms the inner experience. You know, I mentioned how important it is for people to have some hope that that inner experience can change in some way, which is different than the belief that I need to get rid of it before my life can move on. And there is something paradoxical and magical about acceptance, in which when you have a deep commitment to actually accepting, that's the best chance you have of becoming free from an inner experience in the future. but it can't be done in a sneaky way. Like, if I accept it, it'll go away. So let me just pretend to accept it so it goes away. But I do think that study can provide a little bit of hope, as long as people understand that it's not, you're not pretending to accept while you're like clinging desperately to the belief that acceptance will make it go away.
Now, Kelly said a few moments ago that anxiety is often a response to something that's meaningful, not necessarily something that's threatening. So to bring a little more perspective to this idea, let's go now to Dr. Ron Siegel.
So this, in what Kelly was just presenting, this was the middle of the five components, if you will, of anxiety that she was just outlining. And as she's pointed out, we don't hear about it very much. And yet I think it's very, very interesting and clinically useful because after all, Kelly, you used in the video the example of the person who's afraid to drive over a bridge and asking the question, well, why would you want to drive over the bridge? What's the meaning of it? And it connected immediately to her relationships and all these things that really mattered to her, and realizing that, well, the fear was closely associated with not wanting to lose those important life elements. And, you know, if we think about it, because I hadn't really thought about it in terms of meaning before your video, you know, if we didn't care about the anxiety producing activity, if it didn't have a lot of meaning for us, well, we would just avoid it, be done with it, and that would be that. So it's when the thing matters, then we suffer, because either we're in conflict with ourselves because we're avoiding something and we want to do it, or we're trying to approach it and we're buffeted back by the anxiety. And I mentioned that the sort of form of anxiety I work with a lot are these musculoskeletal pain disorders, and that are often caused by anxiety. And there, you know, the avoidance of activity is absolutely central to maintaining the disorder. And the question of, so what have you given up because you've been afraid to use your body normally, and what is the meaning of that you've given up, starts to become really, really important. And when people can start to identify that, then for one thing, they start to come up with a motivation to be willing to do the thing that doesn't come naturally, which is facing the fear. Because, you know, as we start emphasizing how it matters. And the other thing that you mentioned that I think is really important, and this happens all the time with the back pain treatment, because a lot of the back pain treatment is basically offering people the options. Well, what would you prefer at this moment? To have pain but live a constricted life, or have pain but live a full life? And most people say, well, okay, I'll go with the full life. But you mentioned the tricky bargain, or the sneaky bargain, right? Which is, okay, I'll start moving because then I'll make the back pain go away, right? Or I'll start driving over the bridges so I don't feel afraid of bridges anymore, right? And it is so interesting to see, you know, how the mind tries to turn supposed acceptance into a tool for non-acceptance. And, you know, that becomes very, very interesting, I think, to work with clinically. I often say it's like, you know, the refrain in the song about Santa Claus, that he knows who's naughty or nice, this idea that somehow the mind-body knows if you're really accepting it, or if you're just saying you're accepting it because you really hope it'll go away. And it's only when we really accept it that it's freer to transform.
Now, we've circled back to this idea that you can't fake acceptance. In fact, Kelly jokes that you have to abandon all hope that anxiety will ever go away. So how might this be a useful perspective when working with someone who's anxious? For that, let's hear from Dr. Rick Hansen.
Well, there's a lot in that. First, I think a lot of people are anxious about not being anxious. In other words, they come in and they say, you know, I'm anxious, please help me. But the truth is, they're worried that if they become less anxious, they'll become less vigilant and also less motivated to deal with threats. And then that's wham, when a bad thing will happen. You lower your guard, and that's when they get you, right? So for me, it's really quite useful to help people gradually appreciate that they can recognize threats and take care of them without feeling anxious about it. And there are many, many, many ordinary examples of people doing that. There could be a sense of grittiness and determination, capability, even enthusiasm in dealing with some kind of threatening situation without the emotion of anxiety being necessary to serve that function. In the same way, people can realize that they can be vigilant, they can track threats around them, they can drive carefully without worrying the whole time. And then, in fact, often anxiety wears down threat response and it reduces vigilance because it draws people into an absorption with their own anxiety. So I find that that's really helpful as a way to understand it. And then beyond that, to not get anxious that you're anxious. I think that's what Kelly is really getting at in a very useful way. That sense of dread, you know, I've gone through medical issues, I've worried about loved ones, you know, there's a kind of fundamental response that's very natural to that. And it sort of could be likened to the first dart in life, you know, physical and emotional discomfort. It's normal, it's natural. But do we need to add second darts, the ones we throw ourselves, where we add our secondary reactions to that anxiety? So I think for people to understand that anxiety is it's a state of mind like any other state of mind. It does arise, you know, there'll be no end to it, you know, ultimately, as Stephen Hayes talked about it. You know, we wouldn't want to not be capable of anxiety on the one hand. On the other hand, you know, we don't need to keep fueling it. We don't need to keep getting identified with it and preoccupied with it, which doesn't really serve us or other people.
As we've heard from all our experts today, anxiety can prevent our clients from being all that they can be. It can hold them back from enjoying the most meaningful parts of their lives. But there are so many strategies that we can use to help them move forward and avoid that second dart of suffering, as Rick likes to put it. I hope this program has helped give you even more tools to use with your clients. Please be sure to check out the bonus sessions. We'll be getting into how to reduce anxiety that stems from insecure attachment, as well as how to help clients grow from anxiety instead of crumbling under it. Thank you again for all the work that you do and for your decision to participate in this program. I'll see you soon.